Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome to part two of our conversation with Amelia Cotter about, are they really dead? It's a very puzzling thing to me when you're talking about a ghost piece of property. And I've heard many stories of it over the years on our other program, Real Ghost Stories Online, when folks call in or write in their own stories. And it is very fascinating to me because it's, I guess, somewhat easy for us to wrap our mind around the idea of a spirit, a ghost of a loved one, or even your angel and demon type stories, things of that nature, when it is some sort of entity or energy that existed or has something behind it. But it's a whole other thing when it's in essentially a house, a large inanimate object. This is something that didn't ever have a life. It was a structure. It was built. But homes obviously are very close to people. A lot of emotional connection is there for the living with their homes. But to have such an enormous type structure almost appear and disappear in different locations, what do you think that is? And obviously, this is an opinion-based question, but I've heard the gamut of this, where there's the house in the cemetery like this, where somebody's walking along a trail and there's a house that looks like there's a party going on. Even stories where the homes have people in them and it's actively lived in. It's not just this house that seems to be there. It seems to be like a mirage. Yeah, it's going on. We had a story once where people were broken down and they walked to try and find a phone. And they got to this house that had an active party going on it. They were invited into the party. They turned it down, but they did get to use a phone. And they called and got their vehicle towed or whatever they did to get it recovered. And then upon getting to their destination, then going back home the following day or two, drove by where that house was. They wanted to say thank you to those individuals. The house is abandoned. It's still there, but it's abandoned. And it is clearly had not been lived in for quite some time. Windows broken out. It wasn't as if the party got a little too raucous. It was just a different incarnation of the property still there. So when properties transform or take different shapes or different time periods. Yeah.
It kind of defies physics in a way. So at my day job, I work at an astronomy museum, which is, where I am right now. And so there are certain types of paranormal activity that fit onto a spectrum of possibility for me, because I'm like, these things seem to be like physically or chemically, plausible. And then there's those other crazy wild stories, but there are so many of them. And a lot of them are similar to each other. Especially, with Bachelor's Grove, a lot of these stories are very similar. You have no reason to disbelieve these people. And then I saw with my own eyes what looked this light of like a window of a home. And I have no idea what it would be, if it's, if it's a type of energy or being that can actually manifest itself as an object. But I don't know. You can add that to the pile of like theories,
Sure. Yeah, it's one of those things where you can go into the world of time slips and all of that as well.
Yeah,
but even then, sometimes it's like, well, that might apply to this story, but with that story, that doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, because there have been times at Bachelor's Grove when people said that they witnessed the house, the White House, and that they actually saw people coming and going from it. So, people that got close enough to it to see like what you said, that it was like a physical structure. And then other times when it does seem more like an apparition, where people are looking at it, but they know that it's, that there's not a house there. It actually appears sort of as a ghost would. So I don't know.
Yeah. Obviously one of those things where you just walk away with more questions than answers in this world. But that seems to be what happens. The more you dig in this area, the more you kind of go down that road.
Yeah. The more questions you have.
Tell me more about some of the areas in Chicago that you have looked into and some of the ghost stories that you've uncovered or found.
Well, I had the pleasure of being a tour guide for a little while for Chicago Hauntings ghost tours. And so I got to literally get on like a big charter bus and go all around the city and see, you know, tell people all about these different haunted places, which is interesting because sometimes when you're with a large group of people and you're in the city proper, it's not always very spooky because there's a lot of activity and it's a kind of a canned sort of presentation. It's two-hour thing. People take pictures, they get on and off the bus, they expect something to happen. If it doesn't, they're disappointed. Mm-hmm. But I kind of got this crash course in, you know, all these other neat haunted places that I love in the city. So one of my favorite places that I live close to now is Lincoln Park. And that at one time was Chicago City Cemetery. So there were 38,000 people buried out there in the land that is now Lincoln Park, where there's a zoo and there's a history museum and there's baseball diamonds and lagoons and people, you know, hiking and biking and everything. And so I'm like endlessly fascinated to sort of explore that area. And there have been ghost stories told throughout time. Even they decommissioned that cemetery in the, well, I think it was at the end of the 1850s, but by the time they were moving, you know, trying to move the headstones and the bodies to other areas, it was, you know, police officers were telling ghost stories about the place in like the late 1880s and 1890s, like seeing swinging by themselves and encountering strange figures there at night and then having them dissipate in front of them. And the city, which has kind of been corrupt from the get-go, which, you know, is Chicago's longstanding reputation, did not move all of the bodies. There were 38,000 bodies. They did not move them all to these other outlying cemeteries. There are still 13,000 people buried there today.
Are they unmarked?
Yes. So there's one grave site left. It's the Couch Tomb, and that's close to the Chicago History Museum. Mm-hmm. And that is a big mausoleum. It was the largest mausoleum built there. And the ironic part, so that's the last marker standing for the cemetery, but there's tons of stories about whether or not anybody's actually still buried in there. Wow. Or ever was interred in there.
What was the purpose? Why did they decide we have to, especially prior to having heavy machinery to exhume 38,000 bodies and move them? What was their thought process of why do they need to do that to begin with?
There was, so that cemetery got very big. It was around from like the 30s through the 50s. So in only about 20 or 30 years, the city grew up around it very quickly, and it got very big, and it was built sort of, you know, right along where people were starting to build their homes. It's also slightly below the water table, so if the lake would flood and you had this overcrowded cemetery, sometimes it would be like there would be some gruesome things to be seen, and there were some serious cholera and Spanish flu outbreaks where people who were living in close proximity to the cemetery were concerned about having that spread because of, you know, having the water being contaminated and things like that. So they decided that they were going to just kind of close the cemetery and try to move everybody. And they were not successful, like I said, also for a couple of reasons. One is because of like poor record keeping. Another reason is because they were still moving bodies when the Great Chicago Fire happened. So in 1871, the fire swept through that area and actually destroyed a lot of the headstones, which were made, if you couldn't afford one made of stone, you would get one made of wood. They were called headboards, and it destroyed a lot of those. So it was difficult at some point to tell who was left and buried where. And there was just a lot of confusion and probably money as well. There was also a large potter's field out there, so a large unmarked grave of several thousand Confederate soldiers who had been at a Confederate POW camp located on what is now like the near south side of Chicago, called Camp Douglas, and there many of them are still buried there. And there are other plots, like for instance near Reed Dunning memorial where there was a poorhouse and an institution out there where there had also been about 38,000 people buried out there. Some of them had been moved from City Cemetery, and thousands of those bodies are still there, and they've all been built over with like schools and grocery stores. So,
wow.
And the city doesn't even try to hide that. A couple of years ago, they started to build a school in the area where Reed Dunning is now, if anybody's interested in looking that up, the Reed Dunning Memorial and that whole area. And people who were doing construction were actually using like plastic shovels and things like that with like archaeologists on standby in case they continued to unearth any bodies.
When they knew full well that they were essentially exhuming an area that was a cemetery, granted the next of kin are probably already in another cemetery. So, you know, the further back you go, the less people will naturally seem to care or have a connection to those who are buried there. And they expand those areas to be residential, to be commercial sites. Obviously, space is a thing in Chicago. You need space. But did the city have little to no regard for these bodies? Was it one of those corruption things of it's who cares? We're going to make more money doing this than dealing with this properly?
I mean, yeah. So I think there's multiple factors. You know, with City Cemetery, these folks, at least, you know, their headstones were moved out to other cemeteries. And so maybe people's relatives believed that their bodies were too, and that was satisfactory to them. And in the case of Reed Dunning, this would have been an area where a lot of like people who were poor or indigent or homeless or, you know, were part of institutions who maybe they didn't even have records of their name. And people, of course, didn't have as much respect or regard for, you know, people with disabilities and, you know, criminals were buried out there. So that I think a large part of that is just, like a lack of respect for the individuals that were buried.
Having such a mass amount of people who were buried in such an area like the Reed Dunning area, even Lincoln Park, but let's take on the Reed Dunning area where you have grocery stores and schools and residents and commercial and all that. I'm assuming these are hotbeds of paranormal activity now with these graves essentially below all of this residential and commercial real estate.
I mean, I would imagine I personally have not heard too many specific accounts, only the sort of general like, oh yeah, you know, people talk about how they see spirits all the time at the, you know, the Jewel Osco on Irving Park or whatever. I don't even know. You know, I'm just saying. So
if Jewel Osco was still a store.
Right. Jewel Osco, I just don't know if it's on Irving Park Road.
Sure.
But yeah, so it's, you know, something like that. So a lot of those kinds of like telephone word of mouth type of stories, I haven't heard anything specific, but I also don't know anybody who's lived in that area or done a lot of studying or investigating over there. And I guess it would be hard to investigate since now it is mostly like residential. And the former institution is now still in use as a hospital. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to go in and kind of, you know, ghost hunt. Whereas the Lincoln Park, you can still sneak in or get a sense or be around and have some space. I think, you know, the zoo there is notoriously haunted. They give tours there. So they do ghost tours and everything. So it's a little more accessible. But yeah, I've heard that it's quite haunted.
With the zoo being notoriously haunted in that area, obviously something we hear about quite frequently are animals and their sensitivity. Sometimes we assume maybe they're seeing something we are not, especially when it comes to ghosts. Are there any stories involving the animals of the zoo acting in any sort of strange or peculiar ways because maybe they are experiencing or seeing something that we are not?
That is a great question, and I don't know. I don't know. I have not given or been on one of the zoo tours. And it's like, it's something that I do covet and I want to experience.
Yeah.
I can think of an animal related ghost story that people do tell about Chicago, which had to do with the St. Valentine's Day massacre site. And that site is right around the corner from the zoo. And, you know, that's just an empty lot at 2122 North Clark. It's just a little grassy area where the garage was, where these seven guys were killed. And there was a story that you couldn't walk your dog past the area without the dog having like a strong reaction, put it, you know, growling, having its hair go up, refusing to walk by. But that's an older story and people don't really tell that story as much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's still true.
Well, another area of Chicago that I've always found very interesting is the area where the Eastland ship disaster took place.
Yes.
In 1915. 844 people killed as that ship burned and capsized. And you don't think of Chicago being the site of a ship disaster that, you know, somewhat compared to the Titanic in terms of of size and scope, and up until recent times was one of the worst disasters in our country's history, but obviously a different place in time that not many people are aware of. Are there any ghost stories surrounding that area of the city where that disaster took place?
Yes. So that's a fascinating area because it's right just directly in the heart of downtown. So there's always noise. There's always light. There's always something happening. But there have been multiple stories about people who are, you know, sitting in their offices or eating outside on these fancy patios at restaurants that have seen strange figures and usually what they would call costumes or Victorian clothing, kind of grasping, you know, a pier, kind of crawling, trying to crawl up out of the water. And I've also heard stories about people seeing faces and hands underwater sort of rising to the surface and then disappearing again. And I've always joked that I would love to hear what the people who go on the kayak tours have to say, because they're right there in the, you know, with the water.
Yeah.
And I had a one of my fellow tour guides, we would stop in that was part of our route. He said that one year he was out there in January right next to the site. And some ice chunks were kind of floating, you know, slowly along the river. And he is a skeptic. And he said with his own two eyes, he saw what looked like a wet gray arm reach up over one of those like chunks of ice and grab onto it. And that he was waiting for it to be like a fish or a stick or whatever and like flop back into the water and that it just kind of disappeared right in front of him. And there have been some interesting photographs taken there over the years, too, of what look like faces in the water, which I know people poo-poo the whole pareidolia thing. But if you see some of these photos, they're very compelling and interesting to look at.
It's a haunting area. Me and my wife found ourselves in that area of town just inadvertently one night. We were in town actually for a funeral, and we decided, well, we have a night in Chicago. Let's go out. Let's go walk around. And this was probably 5-6 years ago, and we're just walking around, kind of a nice romantic evening, and all of a sudden we're kind of down by this water spot and read a plaque, and it's like, oh, holy shit, this is where the Eastland disaster happened.
Yeah, they have more there now. They used to just have that one kind of janky looking like cardboard information thing that you would walk up to and be like, oh my God, that really?
Yeah.
This happened here. Yeah, and it you do get an eerie feeling. I've always kind of gotten a strange feeling there, even though you're surrounded by like the bustle of everything else.
Yeah. It's Chicago, certainly an area that has an endless amount of ghost stories and just a very unique, interesting vibe for being such a monstrosity of a city. But
yeah,
there's
relatively new compared to other, you know, cities. It's mm-hmm. like, it has a vibe. Totally.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Amelia Cotter. Thank you so much for being a supporter of our program and keeping us on the air as a gravekeeper. Without that support, we would not exist. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.